mystical. Because metaphysical would think that we can take it for granted that there is such a monstrous thing going on by itself as human history and will always continue and give us opportunities. We know now about prehistoric and even historic times where such a continuity could and wasn't, could not have been and was not established. The experiences got lost, that we, out of this tradition that we created in the West, are today able to unearth, mainly in the field of art, but also in other fields by our historical, developed historical science, all those experiences that would have been entirely lost to man if we couldn't do so. This is an exception. If an atomic war would be really successful in the things the physicists think, it could be successful. It is entirely possible that we have in 100 years forgotten global communication, that we have forgotten the whole of the tradition of what we will call here the development of the human mind, and that everybody in single parts of the earth, peoples or tribes, have to start afresh. We are in the possession, as known, nowhere and never mankind has been, of all the knowledge of this tradition and this experience of mankind, which we will call here the experience of man. So man does not really exist, this generality, but it might exist. If we are able to continue this history, and it is up to us, because we are about to break it, and we can ruin it. There is no such a mystical thing as history. History is a creation of man, and men, and nothing else. History itself is no higher power that shields us against catastrophes. We have no guarantees, in spite of Mr. Spengler or other historians and historical so-called philosophers, who try to assure us that if we go down, there will be a new barbarian race that takes over. There is no new barbarian and fresh race. If we are not able to transform our situation out of the civilized society we have today, we might be lost. And this whole historical tradition, which is our greatest opportunity to solve our problems, might be lost entirely. So history, as we consider it here philosophically, is nothing but the chronic of the deeds of men. Those thoughts and deeds of men are either continuous or they are discontinuous. There are cultures that die and have no continuation. And we have had cultures in the West that had continuation and continuity. We are still in the possession of this continuity. But it is this continuity itself is a deed of men and nothing that has been given gratuitously to them. They have done it. And if we want to continue it, we have to feel responsible for it and to continue it really by our doings. Otherwise, it will break. Now, there seems to be a history, an historical trend in this development. Cultures. That is most significant for us here in our inquiry. The human mind developed in a very curious sense. It seems to have passed certain states of mind, definite states of mind which have their own significance. We read a continuity and a development into those states of mind. We read it into them. We cannot be sure that it is in it because we do not know the mind of man enough
in order to be sure that this is, so to speak, a self-development of the mind, we can only be sure of one thing, that men using their mind and making a tradition of the knowledge of the mind and the methods of the mind developed, enrich for everybody today the possibilities and the capabilities of the mind tremendously. All those capabilities and possibilities might be lost in a catastrophe of history. So we cannot even be sure that we have in the human mind itself an inherent guarantee that we can go on if we let a catastrophe happen. Not even that. But one thing we know different states of mind of this mind. And we are entitled to read a certain meaning into it as soon as we are able to distinguish those states of mind and make our free choice between them. Then we are entitled to say that the human mind today, man's mind, is richer in capabilities and possibilities and knowledge than it ever was. And that we might feel responsible to hold this possibility open, because everybody of us depends on us, on it. We are in a, not mystical, but very marvelous, wondrous and miraculous way, are we given the opportunities of almost all our ancestors by this tradition. So we are very rich in mind, so entirely undisciplined and unorganized. Trouble is that here we get at the same phenomenon we get in our experience in society, namely the tremendous enrichment of our mind, or the human mind of today, with knowledge of the experiences of ages and ages. This very increase of our power of knowledge seems to have tremendously decreased our power of wisdom. The creative capabilities of ours are not as much strengthened as the operative capabilities of the mere intellect and mere knowledge seem to have increased. Again, there seems to be a contradiction in the situation, also in the development of the power of the human mind itself. All that we can only approach and check if we have a short look at this development, in quotation marks. Let's better say this history of the human mind and its different states of mind. We have found that since education, if it is a good education, is, so to speak, the antechamber for the way of life, and that we have three different ways of life today prevalent on the earth, that is the authoritarian, the totalitarian, and the libertarian way. We are in the libertarian way. But now we must see where are the roots for those three things. Have things like that happened before? What are the real roots of those three attitudes, so to speak, of the human mind, the human being, towards world and life? Those attitudes seem to be fundamental attitudes. Libertarian, authoritarian, totalitarian, relating to very different, fundamentally different opinions about the task of man in the world, about the question, who is man?
what is the world and what is life. All cultures, every culture that comes about with a history is created by men, means that men take a definite position within the world, that they develop definite fundamental views about men, men, people or society or mankind, divinity, person to person. Those views change, but they are always value creating. The values we have left are mainly the artistic values. There we see it most clearly. But in all other fields, values were created. So we, not wanting to be historicists and merely trying to put on one mask after the other today to pretend that we have now, that we are persons who have the experience of the Mayas, and tomorrow we feel like Indians and the other day we feel like Greeks and behave like them. We can do that, and it is done in the intellectual world continuously. Well, it has nothing to do with culture. It's a mere show, an intellectual show. We do not want that. So we go to the root of the matter. What interests us here is man is a value-creating being. What are his capabilities to create values? What induces him in the first place, or makes it possible for him to create values? Different cultures. Exactly that he is always, and that is the continuity and the eternity of man. That whoever he is, and whenever he lives, he is a being that is placed from nowhere, so to speak, into the world and to a definite situation of the world, being assigned to go out of this world and this definite situation of the world without knowing where he goes, not knowing where he comes from, not knowing where he might go, but placed, so to speak, out of nothingness into the middle of being, namely the world, and an historical world, a world in a very definite situation. So there he stands and has to take position. He looks around, tries to find instinctively first the main factors that are agents in this situation. Finds himself to be an agent, finds other human beings to be agents, finds his society to be a definite agent, thinks to find God a definite agent, and so on, and nature. Those are our checking points. If we compare cultures, we look at cultures as created by men taking a specific position in a specific situation. They are answers to the question that the situation gives them. Their answers are the value-creating forces of man. So questioning and answering seems to be the basic performance of the human mind in order to become creative, to take position. The tradition we were talking about, the historical tradition, since the Hebrews and the Greeks, in the West, till the 19th century, when this tradition broke down, we are living merely by the remnants of this tradition, have added to it now all our knowledge about other cultures that are not Western cultures. We know much more about India and China than people before ever knew. We have added it. Nevertheless, we have only pieces. And those pieces do not even make a mosaic. There are pieces that do not even enable us to puzzle them together. They are just a richness of definite points and impressions. The unity that prevailed till the 19th century has been lost. We talked that there are about the points that there are different kinds of unity. We all want unity. But there is unity in uniformity, totalitarian. There is unity in hierarchy, authoritarian. And there is this tremendously hard thing, unity in community, unity in diversity, which is the productive state of the human mind, the state of possibilities of free creation. In our time, unity has been lost, that we know. Now we have to see what made the inner unity of this tradition in the West. Then we find historically first a sign that hits the ice, so to speak. There are constant revivals in the history of the West. We have the Renaissance. Before the Renaissance, we had the Carolingian Renaissance, the time of Charlemagne already, where manuscripts of Greek literature became known by Scotus Erigena, a Scottish, an Irish monk, the 9th century. Then we had one Renaissance after the other of Greek, Roman, and Hebrew elements in Western culture. A typical Renaissance of Hebrew elements, two typical Renaissances, were, for instance, first, Protestantism, same time of the Reformation, going back to the original content of the Bible, and by that rediscovering the Old Testament to a degree that had, as it has never been known before in the Catholic world. The consequence was Puritanism. Look at Milton, that is almost a revival of this original, very manly, but very narrow and rigid Hebrew spirit we see in Mosaic times. It is no accident but a symbol, but of significance, that so many first names of American settlers and pioneers in the United States have been Hebrew names. Abraham Lincoln, you have the Isaacs in America, and those are all American families, they are not Jewish. Revivals of those traditions, and revivals are always also remodeling them and carrying on, in a way reforming them. So a continuous line of reformations has taken place till the 19th century, and by the means of those reformations, the continuity of the tradition in the West had been assured. Now suddenly, we face a situation where it seems that no reformation can help us anymore. We try and try again, but what we produce is either a shallow classicism, shallow humanism, an extreme materialism, or any ideology of any kind, we seem to have lost the possibility to go back to those sources that once were springing so freshly. We become mere imitators. We try a reformation and we can be reformators because we cannot add anything new. We only can repeat. And this becomes sterile. It becomes more scholarship, Alexandrinic. We live out of books. We try to learn those things out of books. We become filled with paper and letters. We go into a production, almost a self-production of literature, where men or authors are only involved as transmission belts between one older, 10 older books and a new one. They are not authors anymore. There is no authority in them. Because authority originally means only authorship. Being able to originate out of oneself to bring something entirely new and never seen before into the world. We seem to have lost the capability of originating in that sense. And that is one of the reasons why we cannot reform anymore. And this tradition breaks. It is a cause for endless anxiety and inner fear for everybody who is involved in our spiritual situation as a supposed creator, as somebody who is supposed to produce, and sees himself crippled mentally by this driving apart of the human capabilities. It seems almost as if since we discovered the fact that the earth is not the center of the cosmos, that there might not be any cosmos, that the movement in which the cosmos really is seems to resemble much more the explosion of an atom bomb, namely that it is continuously expanding with a terrific speed, that since the discovery of this fact scientifically, we have imitated this image. And we are about to bring in the constellation of our capabilities, bring about the same situation, driving them farther and farther apart, and losing the last hope of a real unity of them. This made a few modern philosophers aware of a strange thing we had never considered before, namely that a similar break, not similar, but one entire breakdown of in the situation of the human mind had once already occurred before. And those philosophers were able to encourage historians to work on that discovery of a new historical phenomenon which we hadn't become aware of. We had neglected entirely the historical time between 1000 BC and the year 1. In that age, everywhere, worlds were breaking down, worlds of a very ancient and great tradition. The splinters of those worlds created new things that were sometimes entirely despotic, sometimes entirely anarchic. It seems to have been an age of continuous, feverish transformation. An age where nothing remained sure, where everything seemed to have to be doubted. An age very strangely resembling ours.
no tradition. Everywhere, the necessity of absolutely new beginnings. This is the age we have chosen our thinkers from here. Because they have one thing in common, they have more things in common than we would have to talk about it. The fundamental thing they have in common is that every one of them was in an extreme situation, a situation which we hope people might be very rarely driven into, namely a situation where they had to realize that the one-way street of adjustment had become so absolute that they had to take a position of entire independence and establish the other pole, namely to adjust the world to man, absolutely, to raise this task, this demand, that the world might be judged by men and by personalities. They were all in that sense in an extreme position. They were driven into that position. And they made their work in that extreme position. That's the reason why they might be able to help us in our plight. They might even have been already in a more extreme situation than we yet are in. But at least it is similar. It is one thing we can compare ourselves to a certain degree in our situation. What occurred, the catastrophe of the human mind that came about in this time and took 1,000 years to accomplish itself, was a complete breakdown of myth. All historical life, and even it seems prehistorical life as far as we know it now, up to around roughly 1000 BC, had been entirely mythical. The state of mind of the human mind, of the man, of man, we can best describe as a mythical state of mind. We will have to find what this mythical state of mind means. I do not want to imply here, again, any development hidden from us of a monster called the human mind. I do not want to imply that then the human mind was young, so to speak, in its childhood. Then it came in another period into adolescence, and now it comes to maturity. Nothing like that. Nothing biological, nothing organic is implied in this proposition. We cast a cold eye on those things. We only want to know, has it been a different state of mind, generally? And what has this state of mind been? Why, what distinguishes it from the later states of mind, of the mind of man? We find after the breakdown of this state of mind, this transition age between 1000 BC and the year 1, around the year 1, approximately, the crisis is absolutely overcome, and the state of mind, of the mind of man, comes into a new form, and almost, especially in the West, but almost everywhere, new fundamental attitudes of men towards the world and towards themselves, himself and divinity and nature have developed. Attitudes, opinions, general opinions, and basic actions that are absolutely different from the opinions, positions, and actions taken before 1000 BC. Different in quality. We have to find this difference, fundamental difference in quality of the attitudes of man and the propositions and fundaments of the foundations of the human mind in those two periods. The second period that starts after the